Today, I'm thrilled to have Akinwale here with us, a designer, creative coach and architect, and an artist in his own right. Our perspectives on creativity and the creative process are incredibly aligned, and I know his insights will resonate with a lot of our creative entrepreneurs. So I'm going to just jump in and get started with some warm-up questions. Are you ready?
Yep.
Thank you so much for being here. I want to first ask, because I always ask this to creator entrepreneurs, creatives in general, is what are you learning about or what are you reading right now? Because I feel like we're always in that self-development journey, right?
Yes. True. We're always learning, always developing ourselves. So what am I learning about? It's something called productize yourself. It's a phrase coined by Naval Ravikant.
Yes, Naval, yes. The OG, the GOAT, right?
Yes. Creator Dan Coe also publicizes that phrase. So I'm reading about it, and my aim is to find my unique talents, my unique skills, my story, and kind of use it in a way that I can monetize it by providing value to people. And so it's the idea is to use my skills, use my knowledge, use my story to build leverage, and use that leverage to build a business, which I use to create products to contribute positively to people's lives. So that's what I'm reading about, productize. The idea is productize yourself. That, because if you look at the way the world is going, there's the rise of the creator economy. So we're seeing a rise of people, what we call creatives, creators. So it's the productize yourself. It's something that is really common amongst everybody. You need to find what you're really good at. So that's what I'm reading.
It's kind of like, right? It's like the intersection of personal brand and product, right? Yeah. So for me, most of my, I call my audience creatorpreneurs. So creator entrepreneurs. So people, I feel like entrepreneurs are just creatives naturally because you're creating a new business, right? And I'm sure we can talk a lot about this, like our definition of creator. But I like to say creator entrepreneurs because there is that kind of level of just taking it from creativity to innovation where you're taking into a space you'd like to monetize it. You take it into a space where you want to have a bit more impact and feedback, things like that. So that is a great recommendation because the whole productivization of like service-oriented entrepreneurs is really hot right now too, like taking people who are coaches or people who are providing advice and taking that into the digital products and app sphere, you know? So that's a really great suggestion. So I got a couple cards for here. I'm going to go between. I like having a little spontaneity, but this is in your realm. So I'm sure it's going to be
that's fine. Good for you. That's fine.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. What is your ritual to spark inspiration within? So if you're feeling a little gloomy, you're feeling a little stuck, is there anything that you do to kind of jumpstart your creativity?
Yes. So what I do is I pick up my guitar.
Oh, I love that.
I just play anything. I just play with it. It's free flow. Whatever comes to mind, I just play. It helps me relax. It takes my mind off the stress of, oh, I'm looking for an idea, or I'm trying to write this particular thing. So it just takes my mind off that stress.
Did you grow up as a musician?
Nope, I wasn't. I was never even associated with music or the guitar in the past. It's something I picked up COVID era.
Yeah.
The COVID
era. It's just something probably that was on your list, right, of things that you would have liked to. I know my husband is the same way. He played a little bit of music growing up, but he started practicing a lot of the piano when it was during that time where you're like, hey, I have this extra time. What can I do to develop myself and pick a hobby that's going to let me express myself? You just kind of during COVID times just like wanted that creative expression.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Okay, so you are technically really in the more creative coach side. You're in the designer side. How did you even come to that? If there wasn't kind of that association with other types of creativity, how did you get into that space?
I studied architecture, and I've been practicing architecture for 12 years. I'm still practicing architecture.
Yeah.
But the whole creativity, I wasn't associated with creativity growing up. Nobody ever told me, oh, you're a creative, oh, you can write, oh, you have this musical side. Nothing. I was just going to the office, drawing buildings. I go to site, I come back. I was on my schedule for 12 years. Then COVID hit. And I'm sure you must have heard that COVID was like a major game changer for a lot of people in the world. And for me, it led to my marriage crashing, led to a divorce. And I kind of faced like a serious spiritual awakening in the sense that I found myself that I needed to reevaluate my life. I needed to kind of do things differently because so like my life just restarted as a result of
COVID. You're starting almost from ground zero when something in your life that's that major, it creates an identity shift too.
Exactly. So that was it's in the process of starting afresh, I started to realize a lot of things because I started to post online. I joined Instagram COVID period. I started to post online. I decided to pick the guitar, play. I decided to start drawing. I decided to do things like, okay, then I attended therapy. Yeah, I found myself in therapy. Therapy also opened my mind to a lot of things like emotional intelligence, setting boundaries, journaling. So it got me
into the self-development process, right? Like creativity and self-development, I feel like are so linked.
Yes, exactly. So that got me into the creative space. That there's this side of me I did not know about. So that kind of also led me to get involved in creativity coaching because I looked at my life and I'm like, that means there are other people out there who are like me, who did not know they were creative for 33 years. And I said I can help them because I am used to things like self-doubt, used to picking up things like procrastination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all those things that creative people face, those problems that they face, I'm used to it because I lived with it for 33 years. And not knowing about your innate talents, your gifts, and how you can
the imposter syndrome.
Yes,
the blocks, the wondering how people will perceive it. I mean, it is just, it is something that it's like, it's not even about competition or other people. It is so much about like a self, you're getting out of your own way.
Yes. A lot of the time. So I'll talk about the mindset shift. Some people think it's just a small thing, like it's just easy to just shift from a regular, I call it a consumer mindset to a creator mindset. But it takes a lot. For me, I experienced depression. I went through the five stages of grief. Yeah, wow. because you start to come to realization like, okay, so all those sounds that I used to think about, those ideas I used to think about, are you saying that I could have converted those ideas into something? I could have created something in the past. You start to think about things like also all those texts that used to go through your head. That means you could have converted them into maybe a novel or something that would have influenced people. So it's a huge mindset shift. I had to go through the five stages of grief, of bargaining, acceptance, anger, depression. You get angry at the people that you grew up with. For example, your family and your friends, because you start to question like, why didn't my friends and family tell me about this part of myself?
Yeah.
Are they truly the kind of friends I should have? Is there anything wrong with me? You start to blame other people. Yeah, because it's a huge shift. So what I usually tell people is that they should not blame other people, take full responsibility on it, and they should see the past life as a learning experience. Yeah, learning experience, because no knowledge is lost. You can convert all the things you've learned in the past. So when you switch to your creative mindset, your creator mindset, you can use that past life as information, as knowledge base to create. So it's a huge shift. Shifted from those two separate mindsets.
Yeah, experience really is such a huge piece of creativity because that's really the well that we draw from, right? I mean, you're taking either the things that you experience internally or spiritually, or it's the things that you're experiencing out in the world. So all of your experience, even if it was, you know, in a service job somewhere where you didn't really have a lot of autonomy and you were just doing your job, you were meeting people, right? Or you were doing something else, right? There's something where you can draw stories from, where you can draw experience from and see patterns and other things that you can use in your creative experience. But I never actually spoke about the stages of grief too. That makes so much sense in that there's so many, you feel like these, you have to mourn the lost or what you feel as our lost opportunities where I could have expressed myself in this way. I could have written these things that would come up in my head late at night. Like I could have written them as poetry and published it or whatever that might be. That makes so much sense. And I can see how sometimes facing that can be very scary for people too. That can also deter people as well. It's almost easier to say, well, I'm just not creative or that's not my thing than to accept that maybe you've been creative all along. And yes, you're a little late to your own game in a way, but that's okay. And everybody has their time and their time is perfect, you know? So that's incredible that you were able to kind of have that realization and you kind of had that at that, you know, that same time as a lot of probably personal development and a major relationship in your life breaking down. You were even saying your friends, like sometimes you're questioning a lot of your relationships because you're like, what has been going on? I know that, you know, therapy, a lot of self-development is so important in there. I know you coach a lot of clients. Is there something that you suggest for people who are now kind of stepping onto this creative path to start to accept that creative identity and what have you used to sort of work through those emotions?
Okay. The major thing I always advise them on is what I call reflection. So reflection is the process of you looking inwards or looking at yourself and trying to understand yourself. So that there are various techniques that I do this. One is I tell people to picture a younger version of themselves and try to write to a younger version of themselves. Ask them how they're doing. Ask them how they're feeling. Ask them what a particular event, how they felt about a particular event. That reflection of talking to themselves helps them understand themselves better. Another exercise might be to picture two versions of themselves and try to draw them. It's like a sketch. Just try to draw them. It's another reflection exercise. So I found out that because for me, I did not go through that. I found out about my creative side just by starting afresh. But when people come to me and I'm coaching them, I try to instigate them to go on that reflective journey. It takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But when I work with them over time, maybe about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we start to see realizations. And
you're giving them the prompts to be able to do that reflection, which is so important instead of having discovered on your own.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it's the idea is just self-reflection. Self-reflection opens a lot of doors and information about yourself.
So when you kind of got into this creative space and you're going through this entire process, you're reflecting yourself, what was the first space that you got into? Like, what was your creative medium? I know you were talking about playing the guitar and sharing some of your art. I know that there was some design in there. So how did the design flow into your creative process and your creative expression?
So if you look at the definition of design means to solve a problem. So in my whole creative journey, I see myself as a problem solver. So one of my hallmarks of my creative process is to identify a problem, which is that, okay, the world needs creativity. We are going into a phase where we call the imagination age, where creativity and imagination will be the major proponents of economic development, and that there will be a rise of creators. So we need to have a lot of human beings who are creative, because those are the ones that will push the world to where we're going to be. And I'm realizing, okay, there are a lot of people out there that are not aware of their creative sides. So that's a problem. And right. I now look at myself and see, and I use myself as a case study to design products that will solve that problem for people. So that's where the design aspect comes in, solving that problem. Yeah, so in terms of how to solve it, there'll be, I would propose different products based on my experiences. Yeah. So that's where the design comes into play.
Then, yeah, yeah, and I know that you were saying that you approach things from a design perspective, and it makes a whole lot of sense coming from an architecture background that you are taking these, it's a very applied creativity as opposed to creating for creator's sake. It's kind of like, there is kind of these constraints that are there, and they're not major constraints. They're just constraints putting it into kind of the 3D space of where you're meeting people, right? And where you're putting your suggestions, where you're putting your ideas, where you're putting your expression, so that it has a purpose as opposed to just putting it out there just to put it out there, which is also great too. But a lot of times when there's that purpose behind it, you have just that enough constraint where you can start to shape it and form it into something that is actionable for other people, that you can, I think you had said in one of your shorts or something too, that you didn't realize that you were doing a lot of design thinking. I feel like I kind of stumbled upon the same thing, where the way that you approach a problem when you have that intersection of strategy and creativity, you get to access the aspect of design that people rarely pay attention to. They pay attention to the aesthetics of design instead of the actual thought process behind design. So that's amazing that you've been able to bring these aspects together. And do you credit sort of that the architecture behind that? Is where is the architecture mindset for, because that's been your profession for so long, how did that kind of feed into your vision of creativity or your vision of design or solving problems?
So architecture for me, when I'm designing, in terms of architecture, I usually have like a story. It's part of my design process. So for example, if I'm designing, say, a piece of furniture, I don't just jump in and I say, okay, this is how the furniture looks like. No, I have like a concept. I visualize the concept. I give the concept a story. I name it. I name that concept in my head, and I give it a story. And I also give it like a responsibility. So maybe if human beings come in contact with that piece of furniture, this is how that furniture improves their lives. So that's kind of like my design background in terms of architecture. So I also bring that in to the creative coaching and creativity space, in the sense that there is a story, there is a name, and I ensure that whatever I create kind of affects people positively when they come in contact with whatever I create. So that's how I apply the architecture into that creative space.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a way that you can kind of have this more robust perspective and a very unique perspective that probably feeds into your personal brand and to your productivized aspects of how you show up in the world and how you show up for your clients. And how did you end up getting into the creative coaching? So you were expressing yourself kind of as a creator. How did you go from being kind of a creator to a creative coach? Was that feedback that you were getting, or was it something that you were like, hey, you know, I want to kind of scale my impact? How did that thought process go?
It started from people reaching out and stating their problems.
Yeah.
I have a problem generating ideas. Just a message. I have a problem generating ideas. And in my mind, I'm like, I have solved that on my own.
Right.
Yeah, I've used myself as a case study to solve that. So when people reach out to me with problems that I have solved personally, so that's when I decided to take it on to coach them. Then You know, I also talked about that I wasn't aware of my creativity for 33 years. So all those things that creatives face, there are things I'm used to. Whenever I'm talking with someone and they make a statement, I'm like, oh, that's imposter syndrome. Oh, there's a reason why she's not making this decision. Maybe there's fear behind that statement. So I take note of all those things. I practice things like active listening. I practice like emotional intelligence. So when people come with problems, I try to apply what I've learned by using myself as a case study to help them solve those problems in line of improving their creativity. Yeah, so that's how I kind of delved into the creative coaching atmosphere. I also realized that the more I do it, the more I learn about what the problems that creatives face. Yeah, right. Because the more I meet more clients and we talk about what they've been going through in their past, their aspirations in the future, yeah, it opens up my mind. I get more content, more things to write about, more ideas in order to help other people. So it's just to help people. I just want to help people and help them be more creative, help them discover their creativity and nurture their creativity.
And then you continue to create as well. And like you were saying, you're getting inspired by, you know, your particular work, what you're learning, and then you're also being inspired by your clients. So what are you doing as a creator right now? Like, what things are you kind of exploring? Are you exploring a new medium? Are you talking about new or different things? Are you trying to pull people into the creative coaching? What's something you're experimenting with right now as a creator?
Okay, so when I discovered the creative aspect, it kind of became really addictive in the sense that I just want to create. It's like, you know, when you discover something new about yourself and you just want to explore it. Yeah, so that was what led me into what people will now call, oh, he's a content creator or he's a creator. Yeah.
Right.
So that was what led me. It's me finding out about, okay, wow, I can play the musical instrument. Oh, I can write. So it's like, okay, I just want to just write. I just want to just create. So that kind of led me. Mm-hmm. It's like as if I have this appetite inside that I needed to quench by creating. So that's kind of led me to creating content. But, you know, I can't just create without any form of direction. I would create things that would help people solve their problem in terms of discovering and nurturing their creativity. So that's most of the content I create. Even if it's a story, if, for example, I'm exploring artificial intelligence, I use artificial intelligence in a lot of my videos. I use it to create content. So if I create like an animation, it's right. So that whoever watches it, there is something that they gain from it. Maybe I want them to think differently. I want them to look at themselves differently. I want them to consider different options. So that's what kind of led me to create. So the things I am exploring now are artificial intelligence, helping me how I can use it to enhance my creativity, to reduce the amount of time I spend on mundane tasks and speed up my workflow. Yeah.
So I mean, my passion really is kind of, again, that intersection of like creativity, self-development, entrepreneurship, tech. And I, because of my tech background, a lot of coding and going through the whole mindset aspect of all the logic and all of that and all of this AI coming up, I'm really pro tech for creators or creatives, just because I do think now the tech is meeting us where we're at, where we can actually scale like our human potential. You don't rely on it. You actually use it to, like you said, take on the mundane tasks, help you brainstorm, get out of that writer's block or that artist block that is, that can often take maybe weeks to get out of, and now it takes days or a day or hours, right? Where you have that kind of partner there without it affecting, I call it like the artist's ego, right? Where you can just kind of play around and mess with ideas without it having to go to somebody where maybe you feel that bit of imposter syndrome or that bit of, you know, whatever else that you might feel when it's another human. You have this kind of assistant that's there for you and that's only there for you and can give you the research needed behind what you're trying to do, especially if you're somebody who's trying to create impact. But I'm curious because I want to hear, and I was going to ask anyway, and I'm so glad you brought it up, is how does like AI go into your workflow? I always love asking this just because to show workflow, it allows both sides to see, okay, how does the creative and, you know, the technological or analytical come together?
Yes, I use AI in almost all the stages in idea generation, scripting, generation of images. In almost all the stages, but I always ensure that the human touch flows all through. In the process of idea generation, sometimes, most of the time I generate my ideas, but yeah, sometimes you just want to just get like a an additional thought process that you can involve AI. In scripting, I write my scripts. It's better. It's for example, creative writing is something I people like coach is something I tell them to develop. We try and develop creative writing. We try and find their writing voice. AI cannot write like me. AI cannot write like you because they it hasn't sampled your writing over the years. Yeah. So it's scripting. I like to write myself because it's much more, it has this humanistic touch to it when you write by yourself. Yeah.
Right.
So the image generation is one of the best in terms of using AI because it's faster. The images are crisp. They're clearer. You can generate a lot of images immediately.
So do you use like Dolly or do you use like Midjourney? What are like your favorite tools or Adobe Firefly? Like what are like your favorite things to use as far as your image creation and what are you using the image creation for? Is it for clients? Is it for your own content? What do you like to use it for?
Okay. So I use, first of all, I use them for my design and architecture job since when AI came out. So before AI, if I had like a project of like when we are in the preliminary design stage where we have to develop concept images, floor plans, 3D renderings, it takes time.
Forever.
To start using Revit to create the buildings and everything. But since when AI came out, it's like you can submit a proposal to a client and you bastardize the document with images. That you use AI to create. So I use Leonardo AI.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So it's easy to use and it's looks realistic and you can in terms of the prompting, it's very easy to just describe it and to give you something very close. And so for architecture, I use that. And for my content, I use a mix of Leonardo and Canva and Firefly.
Yeah. Nice. Adobe Firefly. And AI has gotten really good in the last, I would say, like a couple of months. It's like they've added so much.
They update it regularly and it gets better every time.
And I love being on platforms that have that ability to innovate really quickly and listen to the users and implement those things really quickly. And I think Canva is one of those.
The change process, it's like you open the software and there's something new for you to try and implement. So it's like the software keeps getting better. So it's good. It's good. Another thing I wanted to add is looking at what I went through while growing up. So there is a lot of the situation of the family in terms of how the family affects a person's creativity.
Yes.
And not just me, the people I coach is something I realize because usually when a person is growing up, you usually have societal conditioning, family conditioning, then the conditioning of self. I have two kids, a boy and a girl. They're 6 years old. So I'm really particular about them discovering and nurturing their creativity from an early age. So in the way I interact with them, in the exercises that we do, I take note of it. I'm really particular about it. And I take that information, what I am learning from my parenting process, mm-hmm. I share it out with people so that people also learn, so that they don't make the mistakes other people made. For example, things like developing emotional intelligence with your kids, helping your kids to start journaling from the age of three, teaching your kids how to practice free writing. So those are things I do with my kids and I share with people so that people also learn to nurture creativity from an early age. So it's also part of that productizing yourself. It's something that I'm also taking on.
You're taking on a lot of the lessons that are very universal for us, mm-hmm. and understanding the way that we have interacted with our family, and then also taking it to people who maybe are parents now, which I now can empathize with, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm a new parent. I'm not at that stage yet where I'm instilling all that, but I'm trying to do as much as I can early to encourage that. Even though my daughter is 11 months old, mm-hmm. I'm still in these early stages trying to allow her to express freely and to create, or to not to overconsume, but to take in things and explore and develop that curiosity that you need for creativity. And it's amazing that you're taking those lessons and that you're synthesizing that into your coaching and into your content, mm-hmm. because I do feel like a lot of parents sometimes don't feel like it's enough, right? It's like, you know, the lessons that they're learning are not enough to share, but it is really true that you have to do so much self-discovery when you're parenting. And if you are looking to ways where you can like develop your children and develop as a human being and as a parent, and you're sharing these new types of skills, that applies to everybody. We all need like inner touch with our inner child, especially if you want to be creative. I don't know if that's something that you've experienced too, but I know for me, like kind of getting to that inner child, that playfulness is what makes me really creative. So, you know, in your creative coaching, what types of creatives are you working with? What kind of creatives are you working with right now?
I work with fashion designer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's across various fairs. Yeah. Yeah. But what I've noticed is, yeah, all females. Yeah. No.
I feel like there's a lot of women who are like very problem solving oriented, and they want to take that creativity and apply it for a way that will create an impact. So that makes a lot of sense where you would want to do that, as opposed to just a lot of men are like, I want to create, you know, and this isn't a blanket statement, of course, because I've had a lot of men who are like very similar to you. So I would be almost surprised that you guys aren't connected. But it's almost that awareness of it. They're wanting to growth and money. It's like a growth mindset. Let's go, let's go, let's go. When I feel like sometimes women are a little bit more holistic, and I feel like you are very holistic too. And I feel like that's really great for the long term. You know, it's not just about money. It's not just about, you know, solely growth tactics. You know, it's not the LinkedIn bros and the marketing bros, you know, doing their thing, or it's not just creating because you want to book more clients, which is also important, right? So fashion, music, what's been like a really – have you learned about something about these interests, about these areas that's interesting to you recently, just from like working with these sorts of clients that you didn't know before?
So most of the clients I've worked with are from my continent in terms of Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I realized is if you – the African, there's a lot of fixation on the culture. So,
Right. So
the families that they grew up in are not opened to creativity. Mm. Yeah, they even frown at it. So I noticed that a lot of people that I work with, they kind of have to hide their creative side. I worked with someone who we tried to contemplate to for her to go anonymous in the sense that she will put a particular, maybe like an AI face on her profile.
Right.
Image.
Okay. So a faceless brand, right? I feel like that's the term.
Yeah. An anonymous brand because she did not want her family to know about what she was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I've learned is it's different for continents. If I was going to, I'm sure there's some people in a much more developed country that would not go all through all those kind of cultural barriers. So that's something that I have learned. So it's just
I find that this is something that I've also like seen. So I've only worked with African creators in the sustainability space because that's the space that I was in, and it was in fashion, but it's sustainability in that specific space. Mm-hmm. And I saw a little bit of that too, where there had to be a lot more practical, or from what I was speaking with the entrepreneurs, they had to have a lot of a practical application to it, which I do think you're bringing a lot to, but it is important to remember because I feel like there's a lot of people who will just go online and be like, be authentic, be yourself. And it's like that works in a space where that's more accepted. When you need to get out there and you need to express, sometimes it's not always how that works. So it's good that you have that cultural understanding of that too, because I do think there's a lot of advice that is very ethnocentric to wherever you are, and you know, it's reflective of your environment and what people accept or don't accept. And the thing is, your family is incredibly important in what you're doing too. But I'm glad that you are inclusive in that particular way as well. So you have these kind of people who you're coaching now. So how does that affect your content? So are you doing a lot more like educational content now? How do you draw people in? Are you bringing them into your arena?
So in terms of, if you look at the content I do, at first I started with educational.
Educate.
Then from when I started that and I started meeting people to coach and I started noticing trends. So I started picking up major trends and started creating content based on those major trends. So for example, I created a content that stated about the challenges African children face in an African home in terms of expressing their creativity. And I state maybe like, I do a carousel and I state like five challenges that I have noticed. Then at the end, I say, DM me the word create. So so it started from educational and it has led to kind of like a targeted.
So you're like, you're kind of like doing thought leadership, but going targeted into spaces that you have more experience and like unique experience in.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also you were talking a lot about thought leadership and perspective shifts. And I think that's where a lot of things are going too, because educational content, again, love the AI. It's going to give us lots and lots of really amazing educational content that we can share. But that human perspective is that perspective shift, or like, how can we apply this to a space that people aren't talking about quite enough? Like talking about African children in their households, right? Mm-hmm. You're speaking to specific people and saying, this is a very specific problem that is big enough for me to talk about, but it's specific enough for me to feel like I'm talking, that I'm talking to you. And this is a unique way that I can fix it because I get it. And I can, you know, I can speak to it personally too, which is incredible. And so now, like, what mediums are you using? I know you definitely use YouTube. I know you were just saying a carousel. Like, take your content into different places? Because I know I've seen you on Threads. Like, I know I'm very multi-platform oriented. I like to, sometimes I take the same content, put on different platforms. Sometimes I remix a lot of it. It really kind of just depends on my mood. But I'm curious, like, how do you use kind of these different platforms?
So I started with Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube Shorts. And that's for creating reels. Yeah, just 1 minute reels. And so recently I have kind of slowed down on that because I took on long form content. Yeah. And the reason is that I I foresee a future whereby people will be going online to search on topics about creativity. And so I think long form content is a much more deeper way for me to connect with my audience and to just share my story.
So I thought,
short form content, they're just there. They create awareness. They can lead to lead generation. Yeah. But in terms of forming a deep connection and a story, I'm more leaned towards long form content. So my strategy now is create long form content, convert it into articles, publish on various platforms like Medium, my website,
right,
on LinkedIn, on Substack, and use from those long form contents, create things like threads that I can put on threads, and also create things like shorts that I can put on Instagram and TikTok. So it's just that's my strategy.
Yeah, and that usually over time, I feel like when you're starting to experiment, it makes sense to start with small ideas and start pollinating those ideas out there, whether it's on threads or whether it's on Instagram in your stories or in posts, whatever that might be in a lot of the short form content. Then you start to see those patterns and you start to make long form content. Then you go back to short form from there, taking the long form content and chopping it up. I feel like that's a very, always a very good strategy. I feel like people try to go to, I mean, this may be, it's not exactly a hot take, but I do think a lot of people hear about like Gary Vee and a lot of these other people and they go to straight to long form content. And I do think there's something really special about starting to play around with some of the short form or at least get those little bits of feedback at first and see how things go and not have to commit, you know, like let me do my newsletter and let me do my podcast and all these things that take a lot of effort and a lot of preparation. And you can actually just express, you know, without there's less barrier to entry to just kind of jump on and share a few things and start to see who you're attracting. And then you can start to create that long form content from there. And what do you think has been, what's been a good platform for you? And of course, this always depends on algorithm. It always depends on what phase and season you're in. But I'm just curious, like, where are you gravitating towards maybe like right now? Or where do you, where are you seeing a lot of engagement or conversation?
I think it'd be Threads. You know, Threads is relatively new. There's not a lot of noise. So that space is kind of a space whereby it's just, what do I have to share? My perspective, and it's a place where you meet like-minded people. So Threads is a place that I see that, okay, in the next couple of months, it would gain traction because people get to know what you're doing. But at the same time, on Instagram, short form content is still, it's still a way to generate leads. So people just DM me, maybe as a result of it, if I create a post and I push it out, I could get one or two DMs. Okay, please, I have this problem. Let's book a free one-on-one call. I get that more on Instagram, short form content. So it's just a mix of both of them.
So when you started, you were saying about the one-on-one interactions. Have you over time just wanted to say, let's just do some free one-on-one calls? A lot of people have said they've done like coffee date meetings just to get to know the market and to get to know people's problems. How does that like kind of evolve for you and like your particular offerings as a creative coach? Like, how does that show up for you? Because that's part of your creative process too, right? Like, how are you taking that from, you know, a space into like more monetization or action or turning that into relationship? So how does yours work particularly?
So I do free one-on-one calls, because on one side is an opportunity to maybe convert into a paying customer. That could possibly happen, but I think the most important thing about doing that particular one-on-one free call is to generate a rapport or a like a connection with this person. Because I noticed that all the people I have done one-on-one calls with, they end up being very good friends in the online space. Yeah, we end up, oh, if I post something, they comment. If I if I share something, they ask me questions. So it's like, it's like there's this relationship. It's like relationship building.
Yes. And how long are your calls typically?
Yeah. So the duration of the call is usually 45 to 1 hour, 45 minutes to 1 hour.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, because I feel like some of those relationships I've developed too that have mostly developed into like referrals have been times where I didn't have a specific offering like that, but I did have times where I was trying to book and network with people. And I feel like that's such an effective and underrated space to do that, because people are, you know, we're in that age of just wanting to consume a lot of like mass content. And there's not a lot of one-to-one interactions anymore, unless it's like a high ticket or quoted as a high ticket type of thing. But then that creates a lot of space between you and your people. And there's a lot of really cool research to be done there and questions that can be asked. It's a two-way value aspect. You know what I mean? If you do it, you know, in the right way. But yeah, so that's really incredibly helpful to hear, because I feel like there are a lot of people who are in that space of they're wanting to understand their audience better or wanting to coach. So what are some of the main problems that you're seeing kind of in the creative space?
Okay, so the number one problem is that people are focused on the end product. So if I have a kind of like a definition of, I call the pillars of creativity. So the end product is like the physical space where you have things like, okay, I'm opening an Instagram account, I am posting on Instagram, I am generating followers. Yeah, so they are focused on that. I want to build an audience. Yeah, but the understanding, getting a healthy concept of self, learning to observe yourself, learning to reflect. Yeah, they don't even look at that. They're all focused on that end product. Oh, I need to have a record deal. I need to create more music.
It's the goal.
I need to get more clients. Yeah, but the inner work that they're supposed to do, yeah, they're not aware of it. Even if they're aware of it, they don't allocate time, resources, and energy to it. Yeah, so that's like a major problem.
It's one of those, it's I feel like people forget it's a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's like two people in a relationship. It's you and the people that are receiving your work, just as you are in a relationship with people that you listen to or are inspired by and everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the product is a means to an end. I mean, really, if you think about it, in the end, if there's no one to receive it, what's kind of the point? Like, it's nice, it's expressive, but maybe like where does the impact lie? It lies in that relationship. So why are you not like, as just as you have a romantic relationship, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be working on yourself too, to be able to be good for that other person, to create for the other person, to give the energy that you want to put out in the world to that other person. You got to do the work on yourself. You got to embody the person that you want to be. A lot of these people, they want these amazing goals, which is amazing, but are you ready to be there? Like, are you holding that space in your identity to be that person? They want to be the person with millions and millions of followers, but they're not quite there on that. Maybe we can get into the spiritual talk too, but on the energetic level of like, Are you ready to hold space for 2 million people that want to be in your presence? And there's going to be a lot of positive and a lot of negative in that space, right? Like, it's like people attribute these things, these goals, but they realize that there's people behind that. And like, what does that mean? So what is your, I know we kind of exchanged a little bit on this, but I know there's like I definitely see a huge spiritual aspect in creativity.
So I think there are, I call them three planes of existence. So it starts from the spiritual, the mental, and the physical. So the physical, I call it action.
You're
under the mental, I call it, there are three levels. I call it connection, observation, and a reflection. Then mm-hmm. honor the spiritual, I call it meditation. So those are like, yeah. that's like a channel for creativity. So it starts from the spiritual plane, it crosses into the reflection. It starts from the meditation, crosses into the reflection. The reflection is what we were talking about in terms of reflecting on yourself to understand yourself. Right. It crosses into the observation, you being able to observe yourself, observe nature, observe your surroundings. The connection, connection is where someone sees, maybe you see birds flying, then you take note of how they're flying, then you connect it to something you've read somewhere. Then from there, it now goes into action. So action is where you now maybe create a particular invention as a result of that journey from the spiritual, from the meditation, from spiritual, mental, into the physical. So that's like a creative process. So like what I told you, when I meet people, people are usually focused on that last phase.
Right.
Yeah, because that's what they see. Right. They see the iPhones, see the follower accounts, that last phase. But the other inner work is something that they ignore and they just let it slide.
Sometimes taking that action, seeing some results, as much as like that's not necessarily the thing always to focus on, it does give you the feedback and give you the opportunity to start to reflect and then start to say, hey, now I can take some space to meditate on more things and pull things more into the cycle so that I can keep going and doing more and changing it and doing it more in my way. And, I'm going to get kind of on the topic of this because we're getting, into that space, but like into the innovation space where you can take these pieces and start to tweak and make little changes over time. But this is a question that I always ask to people who are on here because there's no specific definition for innovation, because it is all over the board. If you try to look up the definition, I mean, you got anything from Elon Musk, like rocket noun, here's a, very specific thing, like you were talking about, the end product, to a process, right? Like innovation can be noun, verb, all those things. So I wanted to ask you, how do you see everyday innovation through your perspective? So your clients, you, your creative process.
It stems from our core our core DNA. Like inside us, we are constantly changing. Like just by both of us having this conversation in the last 1 hour or so, our intellectual capacity has changed. Our knowledge base has changed. So as a human being, we are constantly changing. And I usually tell people, if you stare at a black screen for some time, all you see is black, but after some time your brain will start to project images, you start to see things moving around, you start seeing letters. So our brain is wired to create, our brain is wired to make connections, to observe things, so we have that power to bring things out from inside that imaginative landscape into this reality. So that's what I think what everyday innovation is. It encompasses the natural proclivity of human beings to create, to push the boundaries of what is possible. Yeah.
I love that. I'm going to follow that up with, how do you define creator?
I think a creator is someone who has a goal, who has a problem he has identified that he wants to solve, and has a plan of how he's going to solve them, and he's willing to create his way towards solving those problems. Yeah. So it's to create his way towards solving those problems.
And then what is a question that you would pose to the audience? This is I call them creator entrepreneurs. So they're kind of at that intersection of maybe the creatives, maybe they're a bit, I have some techies on the tech side, whatever. I'm kind of right in the middle of that space, understanding the creative and the strategy. So what would you want to pose to the audience? So it can be anything relating to something that you have a question about in your space or about creativity. It could be something unrelated. I just want to pose it there because I love when people answer and you can kind of get that feedback as well.
What would you say is your greatest, what would you say is the greatest problem that you face in your creative journey?
Yeah, well, that's perfect. And that's honestly probably the best question you can ask if somebody's a creative coach, because you can start to see where those roadblocks are. And it's different for everybody. So tell us a little bit more about the creative coaching. What's that process? How do people get in touch with you? How do they kind of get into the process of, you know, why do they need a creative coach? Just so we can kind of get an idea of what you're doing, how people can connect with you so they can start following you and then move on to, you know, potentially working with you as well.
Okay. Yeah. So right now, they DM me. Two major processes is they DM me on Instagram. That's one. Two, they click the link in my bio. There's a link in my bio on Instagram, Threads, TikTok. And once you click the link, you can just click on online creativity coaching. And from there, they can book a session. The first session is usually free. Yeah, but on the form, I put a price there to kind of just make people, to ensure that the people who come through that process are people who are serious. The person is facing his background and what they hope to achieve from the coaching exercise. If they understand what creativity coaching is, because I realize a lot of people don't really understand what it is, because it's kind of like a new, it's a new thing, especially in our society. It's a new thing. So I try to explain to them what a creativity coach is. I try to compare it to what a fitness coach is, what they do, and ensure that they understand it. And if I look at how we have a rapport in terms of, are we comfortable with each other? I talk about the confidentiality. Then once we establish that, then I send a contract document, which has a confidentiality clause, the things that a client must abide by, how they can terminate the contract if they want to, then they have to sign. Yeah, so that's the process of getting clients on the creativity coaching aspect.
Awesome. And what is, since a lot of people don't necessarily know about it, what is that big benefit that, you know, what are you guys working together towards?
The big benefit is seeing someone who was really timid, was really unsure about themselves, was really unaware of themselves at the beginning. Seeing them start manifesting, start creating, start being intentional, that's the biggest plus for me and for the clients. That change, I'm happy when I see that change in people. And another plus for me is I learn about the various problems people are facing. Yeah. So that's that's a big plus for me.
Yeah. And
seeing them create, seeing them innovate, it's a plus for both of us. Then me learning about how to help other people as a result of getting to interact with them, various creatives. Yeah, it's a plus for me.
You both, I mean, it's like anything. You both get better in the process. And what you're explaining to, you know, it is not a meta thing. It is something that for a lot of creatives can take years or decades to get through. So to have somebody who is their support system during a time where they have to overcome a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot of navigation of their voice, navigation of how to express themselves, their purpose, questioning their purpose, questioning all the different things, to have someone to guide that is incredibly valuable. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. Where is the best place for people to get in contact with you? Is it Instagram? You can even drop an email, whatever you'd like. I'm also going to do, of course, show notes, and we'll talk after. There's going to be a Notion document in the show notes. So that'll have some resources for you all to interact with. But what are the best places to get in touch with you?
Online, Instagram, YouTube, Threads, TikTok. Yeah. Just my name, Akinwale Arokodare. Yeah. It's the same name everywhere.
Perfect. Well, see, I love that. That's just good branding, right? You just got to get your name wherever you are, show up, do your thing. Well, I really appreciate our conversation. I know that it will continue to go further online, especially in the space. I'm so happy to have connected with you today. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.